There's a meme I saw that's like a Google worst idea ever, and it's two guys in a donkey costume in like a lion enclosure that are being like mauled. All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, is Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
All right, coming to you after Halloween.
All Saints Day.
Yes, it's All Saints Day.
Nerd.
I mean, she's not wrong.
Occupational hazard.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I want to take a day to remember all your loved ones.
Yeah. You do that.
That's right.
Yes, we are recording pre-Halloween.
Sure.
So I assume everybody had a fun Halloween.
I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
I probably stayed home and did nothing.
Odds are good.
Odds are... I love Halloween. It's my favorite time
of
year.
Yeah, I love Halloween too.
I'm fine. It's whatever.
Yeah, we got decorations up. We're definitely going trick-or-treating.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah. I think you guys are coming over, right?
Yes, yes. I think so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. That's cool.
You want to come? If you want to come to our house to go trick or treating,
thanks for letting us know.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Scott, if you want to come over now that Halloween's over, you're welcome to come and join us.
Well, we're recording for Halloween.
Well, so. We were going to invite you, but you call it All Saints Day, so
I don't. I call November 1st All Saints Day, which is All Saints Day.
Are you going to be dressed up as
like the day that this podcast comes out?
Are you going to be dressed up as like Martin Luther or something?
Right. No, something lame.
You all are terrible. I quit. I'm going to stay silent for the next 10 seconds, just in protest.
Well, we're back in the Bible. This week, finishing the wisdom literature. All right. Yes. He's pouting.
The pout.
They can't see it, but he's got a good pout face on.
I'm staying silent. They can feel it.
Okay. They feel, yep.
This is effective.
They can feel the tension building.
Back in the Bible, finishing up wisdom literature.
Kind of.
Yeah. Right. We've done it all at this point.
No, I mean, it's kind of wisdom literature.
Lamentations. Well, it's like, where else is it going to go?
Yeah.
So with Lamentations and Song of Songs.
Yeah. Hey-o.
Or Song of Solomon. I'm a Song of Songs guy, right?
Yeah, because it probably wasn't actually Solomon.
Yeah, Solomon just gets too much credit for
it's
anything.
The book does credit Solomon in the title, like in the fair. First verse.
Yeah.
It's also probably not it, but we'll get into that. Yeah, I'm sad I missed Proverbs and Ecclesiastes.
Are you sad?
We missed you. It was a good one.
Yeah.
I feel like you would have had some good Proverbs puns.
I like Ecclesiastes more than Proverbs.
I can dig that.
Yeah. Proverbs, it's too fortune cookie. I mean, it's just like, it's like Confucius, eh?
Yeah.
And here's a thing. And then you just move on. Yeah. I like Ecclesiastes. I like the bitter old man being like, hey, everything sucks.
You've got
so
that vibe.
Salty.
Yeah. That's my vibe. Nothing matters, everybody.
Listen up. That's why Patrick works with the children.
Right.
You gotta prepare you now.
Yeah.
Nothing matters.
Right.
Before we get into the Bible, I've got a story for us.
All right.
Okay. The news.
There you go. There you go.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Man, you have one job.
Sorry.
This is from across the pond in Wales.
Is Wales its own country?
Sort of. Yes and no.
Okay. That's confusing.
Maybe.
We think?
I don't think about that part of the world at all, ever. So, defendant attempts citizen's arrest on judge during assault trial.
Nice.
I think this is, I like this.
Let me hear it. Let me hear how it plays out. Yeah.
It plays out probably exactly as you'd expect it to. It does not work. But I like, you know, look.
I like the energy.
You're on trial anyway.
Go for it.
Shoot your shot. Let's go for it.
Burn
I'm
it
arresting
down.
You. Yes.
I'm going to put the system on trial. Like, yeah, you can't arrest me. I'm arresting you.
This sounds like a Michael Scott move. This feels like an Office episode.
I declare bankruptcy. Yeah.
Yes. Daniel Hughes. Had crossed the courtroom and attempted to climb onto the desk.
Ooh,
or district judge. I'm not Neil. N-E-A-L-E. Neil?
Yeah.
Some weird Wales thing.
It's a Welsh name.
Niels Thomas.
It's actually pronounced Jim.
Was overseeing proceedings. Court staff rushed to take preventative action and to safeguard the judge. And he was promptly arrested again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That seems right.
But I'm pro this. Like, I'm done with the no longer try to go for the insanity defense. Now arrest everyone.
Yeah.
If we're all under arrest, no one's under arrest. Yeah.
We're all in prison, everybody.
So what do you think? What are the charges you're going to arrest your judge here for?
If I'm on trial, what am I arresting my judge for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. It probably depend on the judge.
I would think so. Yeah.
Think it's a,
like,
kind
what
of a
about
case
your
by
judge
case.
Is annoying?
Sure. Yeah.
What can you go for?
Can
are they judges
for a bad attitude?
Are they still wearing wigs over there? Those kind of judges?
Absolutely, ooh. They are in Wales and England and whatnot.
That seems like wig country. Yeah.
The United Kingdom.
Public indecency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the wig falls off, right. And you need to take a public sure. indecency. Yeah. Sure. Exposure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is also like, you know, you get pulled over by the police. They say, ask for the license. You just give them that Uno reverse card. They're like, no, you give me your license.
That's going to go well for you. Yeah. Yeah. Please have your cell phone running when you try that. And then please do not call me to get you out of prison.
Do send me the footage.
Right. I don't. Can you make a citizen? Like, is that a thing?
Can you make a citizen's arrest?
I feel like it is, but is it?
I mean, does anybody actually
not,
do that?
I'm
like,
not a lawyer.
If you're walking down the road and somebody's like, you're under citizen's arrest, you're like,
okay.
No. Isn't that kind of what bounty hunters do? Aren't they all making citizen's arrest? They don't have any legal authority.
Yeah, I guess technically.
I guess too. Your dog, the bounty hunter's out there. He's doing his thing. He's trying to arrest that guy.
On TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, maybe... We're recording this way before this is released, so
yeah.
It's probably, maybe it's all resolved at this
who
point,
knows?
But at the time, he's out there trying to find him.
Bounty hunter's on it.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck, dog.
Dog.
I hope he finds him.
Yeah. He's, you know, out there making some citizens' arrests.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I thought that was a funny headline.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into Lamentations and Song of Songs.
Which one do we want to do first?
Well, Lamentations
comes...
Do
we want to end on the downer or end on the...
let's end on Song of Songs.
On the upper.
I have a game we're going to play.
Excellent.
Before we go into
Lamentations.
Let's
play a game. Let's do it.
Don't look at my computer, Elise. Nope. Okay.
Yeah. Don't stop cheating. Already with the cheating. Yeah.
All right.
I'll just look this way.
This is where Gray gets it from.
Okay.
Wow.
Because we're going to do the Lamentations. And I know.
I play checkers with her.
With Gray?
Yeah. I'm kidding. I have no evidences. I just assume that she's like every 5-6-year-old that would
cheat.
Just
a cheater?
Yeah.
That's a bleak outlook.
They're all cheaters.
It was an ecclesiastic outlook.
They're reading Lamentations, all right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, Pastor David, you already know the Lamentations. So, I have a game here. This is a game. I'm going to give you a quote.
Are my notes advantageous?
No.
Oh.
Is it from the Book of Lamentations?
Okay.
Or is it from a Taylor Swift lyric?
Okay. Nice.
Okay. Don't look. Don't look at the notes.
But I feel weird looking in the opposite corner of everybody else. So.
All right. She cries herself to sleep at night, tears soaking her pillow. Lamentations. Taylor Swift.
That's definitely Taylor Swift.
Lamentations.
They didn't have pillows in Lamentations.
It's Lamentations.
What? They didn't have pillows back then.
Yeah. It might be the Message. Version.
Was that Message? That,
this is definitely going to have a little bit of a play with kind of the translation.
That feels unfair.
All right, here we go. Number two. Okay. Your knives and swords are weapons that you use against me.
Ooh.
Lamentations.
T-Swift or Lamentations?
Lamentations.
Taylor Swift.
This one is Taylor Swift.
Dang it. 0-2.
From the book, from the song Mean.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that means nothing to
Here's
me.
Here's a confession. Okay. I don't actually listen to Taylor Swift.
Well, that's,
I just, I get the vibe.
Sure.
Sure.
Our listeners.
I dig it. Yeah. I've been an angry 20-year-old.
I was a teenage girl.
She's like a 30-year-old girl now. So.
But she
wrote a lot of this stuff when she was.
And I think
she's in
just,
that headspace.
She's just there. Yeah. My eyes are blind with tears. My stomach is in a knot.
Lamentations.
Yeah. T-Swift or Lamentations?
I agree with Lamentations.
That is Lamentations.
All right.
Okay.
Come back train.
We're going to do a couple more here. You're like a lion ready to pounce.
I'm hoping that's Lamentations.
Taylor Swift.
That is Back to Lamentations.
Yes. All right.
Okay. The yearning in the deep part of my heart for you. This yearning in the deep part of my heart for you.
I hope that's not in the Bible.
T-Swift. Or Song of Solomon.
But that's not
an option. Oh, that's the part of the song.
Or just Lamentations.
That is Taylor Swift again. All right. One more.
Okay.
But there's one thing I remember, so I can keep a grip on hope.
Ooh.
Lamentations.
Yeah, I think that's Lamentations.
It is Lamentations.
Yeah. Yeah. T-Swift doesn't talk about hope. That's not her jam. No.
Just angst.
Just angst. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Lamentations are Taylor Swift.
Solid performance, Elise. Well done.
Hey, thank you.
I think you only missed one.
I know.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good about this.
As well you should.
Alternatively, I might feel really bad about that.
Tough to say.
Right.
Either way.
Hard to say how you feel, but... All right, let's get into Lamentations.
All right, so what do you all know about Lamentations?
Like, it's sad.
It is sad. Do you know why it's sad?
I do know some stuff.
Okay, what do you know?
Okay, I know, one, it's a lament.
Excellent.
It's in the name.
It is in the title.
That's cheating.
It's actually several laments, but we'll get into that.
It's five chapters long.
It is?
And middle chapter is kind of like a little bit of a brief, like, hey, maybe life isn't so bad after all.
But also it still is.
But then it goes back to back into 4 and 5, which are back to lament.
Sure.
It's about the siege of Jerusalem, right?
Yeah. So it's a lamenting the fall of Jerusalem, and it is kind of our most graphic depiction of what happens during the siege. So if you remember our stories from Kings and Chronicles, right? The kings of Israel have been failing for a long time. The prophets, Isaiah and others, have been saying, hey, if you keep this up, you're all going to be exiled in Babylon, and they keep it up. And so Babylon comes in, and before Babylon destroys the city, they have, I think, a 2-year long siege. And
yikes.
I have never been under siege, but here's what I understand about from watching things like Game of Thrones.
The Steven Seagal movie Under Siege.
Oh, okay. Well, you might know more of it than I do. Yeah,
it's on a boat.
Maybe not. But so the premise, right? You've got city walls, and outside the walls is an army.
Right. Inside the walls, no food.
Are you people, right?
Yeah.
And right. No food. Yeah. No way. No real access to like clean water and things like that.
Poor hygiene.
So it's a really nasty scene because basically the army on the outside is cutting off all your supplies with the thought of eventually you'll give in without us having to come in. And, you know, potentially you'll kill some of us if we come in. We're going to kill all of you, but you're going to kill some of us if we come in. But if we can starve you out, that's a preferable. I don't know. Preferable, maybe is not the right term, but it's an alternative.
Yeah.
So that's what happens.
The walls are the advantage to the inner the city, but the waiting is the advantage to the army on the outside.
Yeah.
So,
there you go. That's military strategy 104.
Art of War, Sun Tzu / Patrick Nazarov. we're collaborating on an Art of War sequel.
Stay tuned.
Art of War 2.
Yeah.
What would the subtitle to Art of War 2 be, Patrick?
I just wanted to call it The Fart of War. So,
of War. The Fart of War Part 2. I like it. Okay. So Lamentations is telling us all about this period of time when it was a really terrible time for the people who were living in the city. And it kind of describes for us not just what's happening, but the people's experience of God in those moments. And so as Patrick set up for us, it's 5 chapters. Each chapter is its own poem, its own lament. And they kind of come with these themes that form through there. But I want us to talk a little bit about lament first. Where do you think of lament in our modern culture? If you're thinking of like, that's lamenty, what do you think of?
Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Or angst songs are definitely out there. You know,
the classic breakup song.
We have kind of like an entire genre of like emo music and almost lifestyle that's like dedicated to lament. So
I once had someone, I was in college, I was trying to understand emo music, and I said, so like, tell me about emo music. What is emo music? And they're like, it's emotional. I was like, yeah, I understand that's what emo means, but what is emo? And they could not say anything other than it's emotional. And I guess maybe that's like an okay description, but
it's not like,
I still like it. And I'm like, I don't think that makes
sense. It's usually not like the joyful emotions.
Right. <It's>, lots of emotions. Right. Anyway. Yeah. So I think those are some places where we hit it. But I think typically, right, it's not a place that we enter into willingly, at least in our modern culture. I think typically we are kind of drug, often kicking and screaming into lament, whether that's through a death or some other tragedy where we're like thrown into this place of I've got nothing left to do but lament. And we don't like go into this willingly. And what the Book of Lamentations offers us is the opportunity to step into those places even when we're not feeling it, right? So it's kind of like training, right? You go in and you train for those moments so that when you're actually in the lament, you're like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with this. I know my way around in this territory. I mean, that's kind of what Lamentations is giving us the opportunity to do, is to step into that place. Even when we're like emotionally healthy and stable and feeling good about life, we can enter into those darker, sadder places so that we're ready for them when they inevitably come, as Ecclesiastes would have us remember, right? Because everything's meaningless.
Well, I think too, this one is more of like, not just like I'm going to a funeral for a death of a relative. It really is like a nation mourns, you know, like a communal type of thing that's beyond even like we're all maybe strangers together mourning.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe like, you know, like the assassination of JFK was like a nation mourning, or the Challenger explosion or 9/11. These are kind of these things that like we're all just kind of like all of us are just taken aback in the same space kind of together. And I'm not sure, maybe even since 9/11, if we've had that communal, you know, lament altogether.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, you know, that maybe like as an entire nation, I think sections of the nation definitely has. And I think, you know, through the pandemic and through 2020, we've seen those pop up, you know, with the murder of George Floyd definitely being an area where there was a community expressing deep lament. And in a lot of ways, you know, even the civil rights movement of the 60s, right, was pulling on a lot of these themes from Lamentations from other places as their driving force.
Yeah.
One of the things that Lamentations teaches us is that lament can really be a form of protest. But interestingly, Lamentations is encouraging us not just to protest against the system, right, if you will, mm-hmm. but actually protesting against God and saying, like, God, this is not what you intend. Like, this is not what you promised. This is not what we believe was supposed to happen. And really taking it up, you know, to the head honcho, if we want to think of it that way, as opposed mm-hmm. to just saying, well, you know, hey, I'm going to go and protest down the street at whatever, which might have its place, right? I'm not here to dismiss that. But Lamentations is really saying the argument is bigger than that. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than just what's happening down the street. So you've got a form of protest. It's a way to process our emotion. It's a way for us to express those things that we can't express any other way. And it's a way to voice our confusion. One of the things the Bible Project mentions about this, which is a helpful phrase that I appreciate, it is that it restores the sacred dignity to our human suffering. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at someone who is undeniably in suffering, whether that's through poverty, whether that's through grief, whether that's through unjust systems, whatever it might be, everybody would look at that and say, yeah, that's human suffering. One of the things we tend to do is dismiss it, right? Mm-hmm. Or brush it aside. And Lamentations wants to say, like, no, this is human dignity, and it's not what it's supposed to be. And it restores that dignity to it by acknowledging the very real pain, right? Lamentations is not going to hold back any punches. It's going to tell you that there were moms who were having to, you know, make the choice between feeding their children or letting their children die so they could have food for their other children, right? Like, it's not going to hold anything back. It's going to restore that and say, this is not the way it's supposed to be. So that's where we start. And then we've got chapters 1 through 4, which are each acrostic poems. And so, again, right, we've talked about this with Psalms at a couple other places. This is a highly structured book, mm-hmm. but it's structure that we don't see in English because it is not acrostic according to the English alphabet, right. Tragically. You have to know Hebrew.
Those biblical authors really should have been like more forward-thinking.
I know, right? Like, would have been super
pretty
handy.
Pretty lazy, yeah.
I guess as like a translator, you could try to do it.
Ooh, I think you're going to, you run the risk of like, do you go for the poetic sense or the literal meaning?
Yeah.
And every translation has to kind of like figure that out when it reaches poems or things like that.
Depending on the Bible, you probably have like a note section that goes with it that probably does specify this in some way. But, you know, even like, Psalm 119, at least a lot of versions will like mark off like, okay, this is the Aleph section. This is the Bet section and kind of mm-hmm. go through that. And I think you could do something similar so that we at least know that it's happening.
Yeah, because
most of us just miss it. But one of the things that we think is that there's a lot of structure to the poems to kind of intentionally contrast Lamentations with the disorder and the deconstruction that's happening all around it. And so it kind of creates this natural tension mm-hmm. That happens between the two worlds. So let me pause there for a second and just kind of thinking about what we've heard so far. How do we hear and how do we understand Lamentations from the context of Scripture? How does that strike you as important or unimportant?
I mean, I like the bit that you said about restoring the human dignity to suffering. I think frequently we think about like suffering or like people going through tough patches as something that is only exists for you to get out of it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Instead of it having a purpose mm-hmm. to itself. Mm-hmm. So kind of a different context for it.
Yeah.
And I think I really like that the Bible has this very intentional book of like, let's just sit in this for a bit and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the authors and compilers of the Bible are like, this matters enough. And I also like, you know, and we'll get into kind of our judgment calls at the end, that Lamentations, like, it's not going to overstay its welcome, like as a book.
Yeah.
Like it's 5 chapters long. It's like, here it is. Let's just go right on deep into this.
Yep.
You know, in some ways, like a book like Job kind of has a more personal relationship with mm-hmm. suffering. It's also really long and also has a lot to kind of wade through to get there. This like community suffering is like, boom, we're in it. And we're mm-hmm. like from verse one, we are in it.
Yeah.
like we're diving straight in. It's not going to ease you in. And it kind of just like allows us to not only acknowledge is there space for that in our life, it's expected space. Like this is not, it's one of those things that's like every time anyone we're close to dies or has suffering, we're always confused and trapped in this like, what is happening? My life is in shambles. I don't understand. Even though the one thing that's guaranteed is all of us are going to go through suffering and die at some point. Mm-hmm. That's like every relationship you enter into has that understanding like best case scenario, one of you's there for the other's funeral. Yep. Like that's just the way it works. And yet always we're confused when it happens. And I think Lamentations allows us to be like, it's always confusing. It's always mysterious. It's always hard. And it never is going to get easier.
Yeah.
Like, it's never going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're kind of hitting on two things. One, I think you're really bringing the Ecclesiastes perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is really valuable to enter into Lamentations. But I think Lamentations, what it's doing that's a little bit beyond what you're describing is that it's not just acknowledging that it's going to happen, but it's saying when it happens, sit in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, don't try to run away from it. Sit and acknowledge the pain and the suffering and the loss and whatever it is that you're expressing. Like, just let yourself be present in that. Because like what Elise said, right, I've had plenty of conversations with people who are, coming through stages of grief and are saying, well, I'm not supposed to cry. Or, it's been, a month. I'm supposed to be over it by now. Or, people tell me that I'm supposed to be done caring about this, or that I should be on, or should I be ready to move on? Like, that's just not how it works. Mm-hmm. And we have, and this is a very, not exclusively, but I think it's a very Western American understanding of masculinity and of, grief and everything else that kind of plays into the social standing, whatever that might be, where we don't give ourselves this space.
Yeah.
I had a pastor friend of mine who used to say, like, I really love a good praise band, but I really want a church that has a lament band. Right. I want a church that, like, has a band that just intentionally gives us space to sit in the stuff that is terrible. And to sit with that. And Lamentations kind of does that for us. But not a lot of bands write songs for this. Though Sons of Korah, hey, throwback.
There we go.
I think they've got a shot at this. Yeah. So chapter one is going to be all about the grief and shame of Lady Zion. This is when it's basically like a big funeral for the city of Jerusalem is kind of how that one's written. And it's ultimately a funeral where no one comforts them. Like, that's the really charitable. It's like going to a funeral for someone that you really love and no one else cares. And so it's kind of tragic.
Yeah.
This chapter two gets into the fall of Jerusalem. And God's wrath. This will be a little bit of a throwback to an episode we'll have done a couple of weeks back, where it really kind of distinguishes between God's understanding of justice and what God's justice is versus vengeance. And so you can go back and listen to that podcast if you want some more conversation about that one.
It was at some point.
Yeah, it happened.
Hard to say when.
It happened. It definitely did happen. Chapter three, this is what Patrick was mentioning to us. This is, for me, kind of the focal point and really the turning point of the book. And it focuses on the suffering one. And this is similar to the kind of suffering servant that we talked about back with Isaiah and a couple other places where this kind of theme comes up. But it's one person, one man, or happens to be, who's speaking on behalf of everybody and taking language from all sorts of other laments from Psalms and other places like that. But the basic argument is, look, if God is consistent, right? If God is consistent to bring about all this justice, all this stuff that is happening, right? The fall of Jerusalem, the stuff that's terrible, the stuff that we're seeing, all this is supposed to happen because this is all an expression of God's justice. If God is consistent in God's justice, then God will be consistent in bringing about the covenant promise. And so that's where this particular chapter turns that hope corner, right? And so it says, look, everything around here, yeah, this all happened because God is consistent, because God had told us for generations, you keep it up, this is what's going to happen. So because this happened, this is proof that God is consistent. So God will also be consistent to the covenant promise of the restoration and that final redemption. So what do we think about that as a hinge point for our hope in the midst of lamentation? What do we think about that?
I think it's really beautiful.
It's good.
Do you want more thoughts?
I would
you
like
both looked
more
at
thoughts.
Me, so that's what you get.
I mean, I looked at both of you. You're because right. I asked the question.
And then he looked at me.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I mean,
chapter three is really powerful. I think it's my favorite of the full five chapters.
Yep.
I also think it in Jesus, we're getting a God who's like this suffering one. It's easy for us in the future to kind of look back on hindsight and be like, hey, that's Jesus. It's pointing towards Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or at least like an understanding of how we see Jesus.
Yep.
Of like, Jesus is not a God that only understands like one side of this. He understands what it means to be in the gates, to be broken, suffering, to bear the weight of kind of defeat and to sit there in it.
Yeah.
Part of one of the things that's interesting and special about like the crucifixion story is it's not quick.
Yeah.
It is long. It is and it's a long to get to the cross than as long to be on the
even
cross.
Even in Mark, which is the shortest one, it's still like, oof.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It took a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. And we know from the context, like, he's up there a long time, hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a firing squad mm-hmm. or an electric chair. It takes time. And that means like there's a lot of time that Jesus sits in death. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. You know, and I think so when we get to this point of like the suffering one is kind of holding this for all.
Yeah.
It's easy for us to put that on Jesus and not only gratitude, but also like he gets it.
Yeah.
when I'm feeling I'm the suffering one, Jesus gets it.
Yeah. You know, so I was reviewing Lamentations and I was also reading a piece from Hebrews the other day, and I've been wrestling with this idea of God's punishment for a long time, and I don't want to go super deep in this because we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about, but I think that I've for a long time pushed back against this idea of God's punishment because so often God's punishment is misused by us to say like, oh, well, that blind person is being punished by God for something their parents did, which is a story that Jesus encountered, right? Or, oh, that person's child died because they're being punished for their wicked life or whatever it is. And I don't think that that's how this encounters. But this chapter does give us this idea of God's consistency in justice. And to some degree, I think that involves right discipline in the same way that a parent wants to be consistent in bringing about justice for their child, and that involves discipline for a child. But that discipline is brought out of love and it is done with this ultimate consistency towards redemption for the child. And so I'm not sure where this is going to lead me yet, but I've been kind of shifting my thinking around this idea of God bringing about punishment for the purpose of, you know, I don't want to say making us more holy, but for the purpose of leading us into the life that we're supposed to be there. And how does that play out in our lives? And I just want to be careful with that because, again, God is not just an abusive whatever who's just like up there like, ah, look at this, watch you suffer. Like, that's not the point either. But I do think that there's a place, as is being described here, where there's consistency to the justice, and so there will also be consistency to the redemption. And what does that mean for us? Yeah.
Do you feel like that plays out more on an individual level or more on like a corporate level?
Yeah, this is like within the last 3 hours that I've started thinking about that. So
you say recently been wrestling with.
Yeah, okay. This is like very recently.
Like over lunch.
Right. Yeah. So I don't have a good answer for that, okay. But I think that's a little bit of both. The last thing that I want to hit on, you know, chapter 4 is all about the siege that we talked about. Chapter 5 then wraps it up. And what I love most about chapter 5 is that it lets you sit in it. It doesn't lift you up and say, hey, look at all the stuff that's good. No, it just ends. And it ends pretty bleak and nothing is great. And the city is destroyed and the people have suffered and nothing, like, it just ends. It doesn't try to put a bow on it. It doesn't try to gussy up your suffering and make it all feel better. It just is. And I think that's a helpful reminder for us too, that sometimes the suffering just is.
Yeah.
You know, the death doesn't always come with a happy ending to wrap it up and make it a Hollywood movie. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just terrible and that's okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that those people who were experiencing this, this is kind of more poetic retelling of the story. When the siege ended, they were either killed or basically prisoners of war, carted off to a new country where they all died. And eventually their grandkids came back and rebuilt and were able to kind of like redo something. But those people never saw that. They had they left with like...
Maybe some of them did.
Maybe.
They come back and some of them are weeping because they remember the temple from before.
Yeah. Huh. It's also a long time, though. It's like 75 years.
It was Ezra and Nehemiah, man. We just read that a couple months ago.
It's a long time, right?
I'm not arguing that it was a long time.
What was the lifespan back in the day?
Anyway, depends.
It kind of depends, yeah.
Did they count years the way we do? I don't know. Maybe the earth spun at a different speed back then.
They knew how to count a year. Okay, oh they gosh. Understood. Yeah. But I do think it's like this idea of like they all left Jerusalem and they had no clue.
Yeah.
That this was going to happen.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that God abandoned them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for us too. Like when we are in those moments, we may have no idea how any of these things can, will, or even could be restored or redeemed. But that doesn't mean if we don't see it, even in our lifetime, that God is not actively invested in our suffering and what we're going through. Because sometimes we are in Jerusalem and we're in a siege and we just die.
Yep.
There and that's just hard.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Hopefully none of us are actually under siege.
Yeah. Lamentations.
But if you are, email us because we want to hear about it.
We do. I want to hear about your life under siege. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Or call the police.
For fart of war too.
All right, let's get into our next.
Don't call the police for fart of war.
No. Call us.
All right, let's get into our last of the wisdom lit.
Yeah.
We're putting that quote. Mm. Song of Songs.
All right.
Yes.
We.
Do you have a game for Song of Songs?
I do not have a game.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe for the best. You know, I will say, you know, if you're listening with young children.
Content warning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what direction to go into. None of my notes
have this. We cannot be held accountable.
But Song of Songs does have, you know, look, we're talking about a siege where people died. Like, there's definitely some content warning element.
Yeah.
This is a different Americanized version of what a content warning would be. Sure. Yes. Yeah, but here we are. Pretty well-known book.
Yeah.
Not necessarily well understood.
Nobody knows
Definitely
what to do
not.
With it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like, you know who should study this? College kids.
Yeah. College kids and all their raging hormones. Right. Absolutely.
That's
a
good idea.
Yeah. It's an interesting book. So we're going to get into this. So ultimately, it's a collection of love poems.
Yep.
With an intro and a conclusion.
Sure.
But not really any kind of structure.
Pretty free,
or
free-flowing.
Story. Very free flowing. It'll like circle back and come around.
Sure.
Like it'll, it's not a straight line from intro to conclusion.
No, it is not.
Yeah. So let's get into the title. Song of Songs, which means like Holy of Holy or King of Kings. It means like the best song.
Yes. It is the song.
This is this is the greatest song. Not just a song.
We should write this song.
Yeah.
We should, Sons of Korah should record the Song of Songs.
The Song of Songs.
This is like Jack Black, the greatest song in the world?
Yeah, that's
This is not the greatest song in the world.
It's a tribute to the greatest
song. It's a tribute. This is just a tribute. Yeah. That's right.
Do you have a favorite song?
Like of Song of Songs? Or
in your life? In your life.
I have like favorite songs that I like to like sing along with.
Okay, what?
I like a lot of Queen that I like to sing along with.
Okay.
The other week I got to go to a Queen concert where it was like a tribute band that played with the Houston Symphony. It was pretty epic.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Elise, do you have a favorite song?
I do. I have many favorite songs.
No, that's not how favorites work.
Hold on.
give us one. Yeah.
Lovely by Minor.
Okay.
Which is very obscure. Another one that maybe somebody's heard of would be Hymn for the Weekend by Coldplay.
Mm. Okay. That's a good one.
I like Come Sail Away by Styx.
Renegade by Styx.
Renegade is also a good song.
Yeah.
All right. So in the book, in the intro, it says it's by Solomon.
It does.
It accredits Solomon to this.
This dude.
So I'm going to start starting all my sermons by saying, hey, Solomon wrote this.
So, I mean, hey.
See what it takes.
That's what evidence for Solomon. It says it right there. It's from Solomon. So maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he did half the stuff that he gets credited with.
Does it say Solomon write this?
It says it's by Solomon.
It just says Song of Songs by Solomon.
Extremely skeptical about Solomon in general.
The main voice. So here's the evidence maybe against it being Solomon.
Sure.
The main voice that we hear is the beloved, which is the woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which Solomon was not.
She has the main voice in this. Solomon also, spoiler here, had 700 wives.
Yeah.
So if he's writing like this like epic love poem to one woman.
Which one?
Yeah.
May not be him.
Going to start some fights down in the old harem.
Yeah.
It'd be problematic.
Yeah. Right. Maybe, but I think probably, you know, most scholars would tell you, maybe it's more of like, it's in the vein of Solomon.
Right.
Like, it's like, Solomon's a wise guy. This is a wise poem.
Solomon-esque.
Yeah. Right. It's like the Fart of War. It's like in the vein of Sun Tzu.
Right.
Yes.
Right there.
When you're reading, you're picking up on those hints of Sun Tzu.
Yeah. Right.
You're just whiffing them in.
Right. Yes. Wafting. Yes.
Solomon-like love. I too like love.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely going to explore the human experience of love and sexual desire.
Okay.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
How many jokes are we going to not make?
Yeah.
All of them. Right. None of them are going to be made so long as we're recording.
There are going to be lots of like blank spots.
Yeah. How much editing is this going to require here for the end here? So there are two main characters.
Okay.
The beloved.
Which
is a woman's voice.
Yep.
And the belover.
Yes, well, and, sure that's they're called. Yes,
and her lover, which is a shepherd, you know, that she's engaged to.
Mm-hmm.
And the poems will shift back and forth between those two voices, back and forth. And then there's also friends.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like in Greece, you know, where she's talking to her friends.
Yeah.
Only it's less like creepy.
Greece the musical, not like the country Greece. I was like, sure. Yeah. Ancient Greece. All right. What are we talking about? I'm with you now. In Greece.
I like how you just jumped into me like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, of course. Greece.
The musical. Like, tell me more. Right, tell me more.
With what was her name? Sandra D.
Sure, I don't know.
She did something.
I actually don't really like Grease. I think it's weird and creepy.
Fine. Yeah.
And all the people are like 40 years old playing teenagers.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So no clear structure, no clear storyline,
like
no clear narrative.
Yeah.
So doesn't even really have an ending. It has a conclusion, but not really an ending.
Yeah.
So two big themes. Theme one, intense desire.
Okay.
There it is.
Okay. They are constantly expressing their love through seeking and finding one another.
Sure.
So like constantly this idea of like
where great game of hide and seek.
Yeah, basically it's like this this very romantic hide and seek.
Wow.
Where's my lover? And they're like, I'm over here. Like it's like Marco Polo. Like you know, they're getting it. So
wait, am I doing it wrong? Yes.
Maybe.
You know.
Yeah, if you're single, try this. Check this out. You know, just start screaming Marco and single smars, and there you go. Like, when anybody says Polo, you're in. You just made.
Yes.
All right.
David's dead.
Yeah.
I'm good.
So they're gonna look for each other.
I'm good.
They're gonna find each other.
Yeah.
They're gonna embrace.
Yep.
And then right when it gets a little racy.
Yep.
Cutscene.
Sure.
So like we don't know, you know, it leaves it up to the imagination.
That's just because the author didn't want to have to write that part
about what comes
next. I do
that
next. All the time. Right. Yeah. Yes. I'm like, eh.
Chapter change.
My parents might read this.
Yep. Cutscene. And repeat.
Solomon's parents were
and
dead. That was not a problem.
And then we repeat the theme again. You right. know, it's probably not Solomon though. So
yeah. Right.
He's just worried about his 700 wives.
Yeah. So it does have again. It does have a lot of like it. It does deal with physical and romantic love.
Yep.
So those elements are certainly there.
Yes.
But it's not graphic, really. I mean,
at least not by American standards.
Yeah. It's not going to be at. It's not going to get too much that in that direction. Like they're going to always kind of like pull away at the last.
We don't typically compare our beloved to various animals like antelope. And
we're going to get there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll hold on.
I mean, I feel like it is graphic if you. If have you an understand, like
if you're an ancient Hebrew,
exactly, super graphic, yeah.
I'm saying in the text, it's not, for lack of a better word, like pornographic.
Yeah,
that's
fair. Yeah.
So that's the first theme. Theme two is the joy of physical attraction to one another.
Yep.
So this multiple times they're going to pause and they're just going to describe how each other look in elaborate metaphors, and these metaphors.
Yep.
We're getting weird.
Yeah.
This is true.
Things like your eyes are like doves.
Sure.
Wow.
Your hair, it's like a flock of goats.
Your hair. You've got it.
Yeah.
Your teeth are like lambs.
Uh-huh.
Your neck is a tower.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like a long neck.
Maybe. Yeah.
I feel like this girl is just like, oh my God. Like, stop talking. Let's really, embrace again.
Not so much for the talking for you. This is not your strong suit. Right. It's fine. Yeah. You've got other good qualities.
Right.
Yeah, these metaphors, would they work for you, Elise? If some you know, prospective gentleman in your single days came up to you and were like, hey, your neck is like a tower.
You went to a Baptist school. I'm sure somebody tried these pickup lines.
Yeah.
Did somebody try Song of Solomon as a pickup line on anybody there? Was that a thing
I'm
that
sure.
people did?
Yeah. I'm sure, yeah. Not me, thankfully.
That's good.
Yeah, these are... odd, to say the least. These are not the metaphors we would use.
I've never looked at someone's teeth and thought, those look like lambs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, if somebody came up and be like, your hair looks like a flock of goats, you're like, get away from it.
I don't think that's the compliment you meant it to be.
That's not a date, too. That's restraining order. Yeah, but Hebrew metaphors are not visual, so it's not a visual metaphor. It's a meaning metaphor.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we know what flock of goats for
what's
hair
the
means?
Meaning?
Yeah. Let's take a guess here. So if you're looking at the meaning behind this, not the visual
flock of goats.
Aspect. So let's say
they eat everything.
Your eyes are like doves. What would be the
they flutter
the meaning? So fluttering. Your eyes are.
There it is.
A dove is a beautiful bird. Your eyes are beautiful.
Yeah.
They stand out.
Did you know a pigeon and a dove are actually the same bird?
I did not know that.
They are not genetically different.
Wow.
Interesting.
Is that pigeon metaphor?
Just saying.
Just got a lot stupider.
Your eyes are like pigeons.
Yeah, I've seen thousands of pigeons in my life. Never a baby one. Where are those babies at?
Yeah, where are they?
I don't know, man.
That's a good question, right? Like, where are they?
Where are the baby pigeons?
Do they just like not reproduce in the same way as other birds? They just like split in half.
They just pop up and there's an adult bird right there. Where are those baby pigeons at? All right. So I think it's like, yeah, your eyes are beautiful. They stand out.
Sure.
They're pure. This idea. So your teeth are like lambs. They're white. They're gentle.
Fluffy.
I think it's like when you smile, I get this feeling like I'm looking at a beautiful little baby lamb, kind of a thing. You know,
I don't spend a lot of time with baby lambs, so I can't speak to that. I don't know.
Yeah, or smiling.
Yeah, or smiling. Yeah. I don't do either of those things.
You know, for me, I say like your neck is a tower, as this idea of like when I'm in this like lover's embrace, there's an element of safety. There's like
in your neck.
Yeah, so like when we're
you wrap your arms
when we're wrapped when
like
yeah,
a hug.
Yeah, when we're nuzzled together, there's safety and vulnerability, but I feel protected. And so that's what, so maybe hair like goats, like a flock of goats. This one might be the tough one here.
Keep stretching it out. Where are we going?
For me, I'm gonna say your hair is wild. It's flowing.
Ooh, yeah.
It has
untamed,
but still
in a good way.
Has this sense of like beauty to it. Yeah. Yeah.
You know how sometimes you see those videos of like sheep being herded by the dogs and they all move in like this kind of coordinated do goats do that?
Why not?
Why not?
Because if they did, that'd be kind of a cool way.
Like, actually, I'm pretty sure goats are just anarchists. I think they're all over the place.
So your hair is like scientist.
An anarchist.
Just messy.
Yeah.
But I dig it.
It's bleeding everywhere.
Yeah.
Not bleeding. Bleating.
The T. Hard T.
Yeah. These themes, the theme one and theme two, can be expressed again and again and again, and the tension of their relationship will build, heighten, and
bluey.
Then we restart. Yeah. And it's supposed to highlight this mystery and power of sexual and romantic love. Yeah. That we're going to get. Okay. So let's get to the conclusion.
All right.
I'm going to read to you.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. I think this is nice here. Verse 6 and 7 of chapter 8. It's only 8 chapters long.
It's longer than Lamentations.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, never mind.
It's probably shorter, maybe word count though.
That could be. I think they're brief.
These are briefer poems. Yeah. Here's 7. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot sweep it away. If one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned. So this is kind of this idea of like love is beautiful, mysterious, powerful, and it cannot be attained except by giving love.
Love is all you need.
Like you can't get it any other way.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
You can't buy me love. Yeah, so from the Beatles, right there.
Sorry, I already did. Love is all you need.
Maybe they were influenced. So this is all about talking this idea of like we all have this longing to be known and to know, and that happens in love, and which is a mystery and gift from God.
Sure.
Then
I'm down with that.
It doesn't end there.
Oh,
and we get a little,
I thought you told us that was the ending.
We get a little bit of a like an odd moment.
Bonus
where Solomon shows up.
Oh.
Oh.
He doesn't have like lines. The beloved.
He just walks through.
The beloved just kind of like talks about Solomon. Like, hey, you remember Solomon?
He was great.
He tried to buy love. Am I right, everybody?
Am I right?
And it didn't work.
That's true.
Did it though?
He tries to buy the beloved's love.
Yeah.
She rejects him.
Yeah.
And goes for the shepherd.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, and then it ends with them
can't buy
looking
love
for each other once more. Come away with me. This idea of like, let's come
sail away.
Come sail away. Yeah, come and find and go away. So we have this.
Come away with me. Oh, that's Norah Jones. Sorry, that was a different
one. That's our wedding dance song.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a nice one.
It is.
So why is this in the Bible?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean,
depends on who you ask.
Right. Yeah. I'll say from your perspective that you brought towards the end there, right? That, you know, there's love is this all-encompassing, powerful gift from God, right? I think that's a powerful thing for us to encounter and to experience within the context of the scriptures, because it can serve as, albeit strange, but as a metaphor for God's pursuit of us, right? That whether we're the beloved or however that's playing out, right? That God has this pursuit for us that's like this endless dance that keeps going around and around. And so I think there's value in it there. That's where I'll stop with that.
Sure.
It's a weirder book. I don't know. I mean, it's got a purpose, but I can't tell you why every book is in there. And some of them are more clear than others.
Yeah. I don't think I really buy that it's a metaphor.
I think there are definitely many scholars out there.
Even if a poem's not written as a metaphor, that doesn't mean you can't read it as a metaphor.
Sure. I think people are more comfortable with it as a metaphor, generally speaking.
Sure. The metaphor is always more comfortable.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's less true.
I mean, maybe. Like, there's some language in there that when you're thinking of, like, that's the relationship between God and Israel, it's like, that's kind of awkward. So.
Yeah. I'm not saying the metaphor is perfect. Or that we should say, oh, it's a metaphor, and that's all we should do with it. I just think that's a reasonable way to hear it and to understand it within its context in Scripture.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly major elements of Jewish and Christian scholars out there who think, like, it is an allegory about the relationship between God and Israel, that this is kind of like this brief bit, like, this is what it's kind of like. And then Christians will be like, same, but with Jesus and the church. like, we're getting in on that, too.
Great. That's right. Run it back.
But it's actually Jesus and the church. And also, one of the things here that I saw in the video I watched for this, in the last 100 years, archaeologists.
Our last 100 years?
Our last 100 okay. years. Archaeologists have discovered tons of romantic poetry from Egypt to Babylon from this time period.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
So
this is not a standout necessarily. This would be something that was happening.
This would be like the Hebrew equivalent.
Yeah. So yeah. It very
were they
well,
also describing people's hair like goats? Was this a common theme?
Unaware. I did not read them.
We'll have to go and read those.
So it could be exactly what it is. Yeah. A collection of love poems that they're like, this is powerful enough. In the same way that Lamentations highlights for us what it means to sit in mourning, this is like what it means to be in love. This is all part of the human experience that's not completely contingent on faith on things like this, but faith is connected to both of those experiences. That we bring faith to our romantic love and faith into our mourning. Both of those things are there. When you're a person of faith, it encapsulates all of it. And so it could be that, could be all three. I don't know.
I mean, I think, you know, in the Bible, so frequently when we think of like mentions of romantic or sexual love in the Bible, it's like in a negative context, right?
Sure.
Like a do not, thou shalt not type thing. But it's kind of nice to get like a break from that and be like, no, this is like a really positive
thing. This is a gift.
Thing.
So, it should be celebrated.
Yeah. So that's more, I think, where I land on it than metaphor.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really beautiful thing. You know, I'm pro Song of Songs. In the right context, outside of it, it is weird. I mean, it is an
odd
book.
Is not going to be one that you're doing in a high school Bible study?
Probably not.
I hope.
Oh, no. I definitely had a high school Bible study on Song of Songs.
Okay, well, Patrick, you're not allowed to do this
in
a high school Bible.
I'm not interested in that. And I, you know, I think you have to be in the right frame of mind to kind of come into Song of Songs and kind of take it for what it is and kind of digest it. The last thing I want to highlight is Song of Songs has a lot of garden imagery. So it's very possible they're kicking it back. Let's
all
kick it back all the way back to Adam and Eve, and maybe these beloved and the lover are supposed to be Adam and Eve. It's very possible they're this they're these characters, and there's in the purest form when you're in the garden and love is in its best possible form. This is what it's supposed to look like. And all of us don't live in the garden though. We live in kind of this broken, destitute world. So love here can be glimpses of it, but sometimes it can devolve into selfishness or scorekeeping or pride or whatever kind of it devolves into. So Song of Songs may be a callback to like, this is what it's supposed to look like. This intimate pursuit, continual pursuit of one another, this continual complimenting of one another. And it never is fully... like the word consummated. It's always got another pursuit, another compliment coming.
I will say, if this is a throwback to Adam and Eve, I give a little bit more grace on the goats in your hair thing, because what's Adam got to compare it to? Like
nature.
Goats. Goats. Stuff. Your hair is like those goats.
That's true. I just named
now.
Right.
Those things. Those things are called goats, and that's what your hair is like.
Do we want to cast anybody here? Do you want to cast someone?
The beloved.
I absolutely do not.
Yeah.
We got to do ratings, though. We haven't done ratings yet.
We have not done our ratings. Okay.
Do we want to do Lamentations first?
We'll do Lamentations first.
I'll give Lamentations a solid 1.5.
No, wow. Half of them.
I'm giving it 1.
Same reason I gave Ecclesiastes high ratings. I like when we get chances to sit in it.
I like Ecclesiastes more than Lamentations.
That's fair.
I think Ecclesiastes is a little more fun. It's got a little more playfulness to it.
For sure.
Lamentations is a little much. It's much of a downer.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's a short downer.
It is short, and so I do like that about it.
Brevity has its place.
All right. So 1, and you give 1.5, and at least give you half. All right.
Okay.
Song of Songs. What are we going to give this one?
Solid 1.
I'm also going 1 here.
I do 1. Yeah.
You're being generous with your 1, aren't you?
No, I really want to give it 2.
Oh, okay. You're holding back.
I'm so enthusiastic. Right. No, I'll give it 1.
For me...
Just because it's weird.
It is weird. Yeah. I think it's a little like... It's a little like revelation when you're like, let's get in there. It'll be so interesting. And then you actually get in there and you're like, it's fine. You know, like revelation's more like, I don't understand any of it. This is a little more like, it's fine. You know, like it's not that. It's just
listening to bad pickup lines.
It is some poetry that existed in an ancient world. Like, I'm not interested in really in reading like poetry from pre the modern era. Like, none of us has ever done that. So it's like it's not as compelling or interesting as maybe I think it will be, but the themes in there are really awesome. And so like,
but you got to work hard to get there.
But you got I think you have to work a little harder to get there. So
this would not be a recommended first step into the scripture.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a last step. In all honesty, like if you're reading through the Old Testament, you can probably skip some of this, get to Jesus, and then come back to these things.
Which is probably what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And we'll see.
Yeah. There you go.
Only time will tell what happens in December.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like December would be an appropriate time to jump to Jesus because.
Yeah.
Christmas.
Yes.
Maybe we'll see.
It lasts for how long? How long do you think Christmas lasts for?
12 days.
12 days.
It's not how long do I think Christmas lasts for.
Yeah, no, but it definitely is.
It's on the liturgical calendar. Like, Christmas lasts for 12 days.
Yeah, no, but we get Christmas Eve.
Christmas Day is day one of those 12 days. Yeah.
No.
Exactly, I know.
Listen.
We'll get there.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
All right.
Recording in October. I'm already getting beat up for Christmas. This is gonna be a fun 2 months.
Can't wait.
That's it.
All right. Well, hey, if you liked this episode or any of the other stuff that you've heard on Beyond Sunday, find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. Be sure to send us a note with your great stories about Lamentations or about Song of Songs. We'd love to hear how you've experienced these in the past or how you've had Bible studies that were weird or fun or whatever in the past. We'd love to hear
those really stories. Awful pickup lines.
Oh, yeah. If you've got weird, really awful pickup lines, we would love to read those too.
I want to hear your best pickup line metaphors in the vein of Song of Songs.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. What's your best
Not song? Visual, just the meaning.
That's right. What's your best Song of Songs style pickup line? We want to hear that. BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com is where you can send those.
Hey, baby, you look like a flock of cows.
flock of cows?
I don't know. What
herd.
What?
Herd of cattle.
You look like a herd of cattle.
Yeah, there you go.
The potty trained variety? Or
yeah, absolutely. Potty trained cattle. All right. I think I've done all the things. So, yeah, we'll see you next time.